Absolute Rally with Tony Simpson, Ryan Champion and Jack Bennion.
Hello everyone, welcome back to Absolute Rally, episode 1, season 10. We're back. This is the run-up to Christmas, and it pains me to say that. In other news at the moment, my child is still yet to be born. It was meant to be born in that two-week window. Technically, my child is still in Parc Fermé. Do your own jokes from here on in. It's going to be a busy old season. We've got two more events left at WRC. Obviously, ERC's done, but we've got loads and bits and pieces that we're working on to get ready for the end-of-season quiz, which one or two people tweeted about in our two-week break. Yes, there will be the end-of-season quiz, and I'm going to try and do it with a difference. But I'm not going to say any more because I haven't thought how I'm going to make it any different yet. But anyway, there you go. We get sidetracked. There's no show without Punch. There's no Punch without Judy. And there's no show without And. So I'm going to say on my left, hello, Jack Bennion.
Hello, Tony Simpson.
And I'll say on my right, hello, Ryan Champion.
I'm a bit confused by the Punch, Judy and everybody else. But hello, Jack.
Well, if there was only three, isn't it? You know, I was going to try and be the And. You were going to be the Punch and Judy. I was going to be the And. I'll be honest with you. I didn't really think it through, right?
All right. Okay.
I'll just level with you. I just didn't think it through. Boys, we're in a period of celebration. It was a good weekend for British rallying as a whole. And I realise that we do have overseas listeners. So I apologise for us basking in the glory of having two successes, one in ERC and one, of course, in WRC with Chris Meek. We're going to come to Jack Bennion first. Obviously, your paper that comes out today, Motorsport News, of course. And big picture. Chris on the front page and Masterful Meek claims victory. I think we all enjoyed this one, didn't we, Jack?
Yeah, it's difficult not to enjoy a good comeback story, isn't it? It doesn't really matter who it is and what the circumstances are, but we all love a try, don't we? And there's no doubt Chris Meek's definitely one of those. So yeah, it was a magnificent weekend from him, and he was just heads and shoulders above anybody else for the majority of the asphalt stages, really. So a well-deserved event, and no sort of discussion on this one about his road position or anything like that. It was just straight up. Chris Meek was faster than everybody else, really.
Absolutely right. We were hoping to have Chris, and we've been talking to Citroen over the last couple of days. Unfortunately, we couldn't quite get Chris in time for recording. We may get him for next week. But anyway, is this, dare I say, I can say it because probably he's not here at the moment, but is this the frustration with Chris? You know, we go from the sublime to the ridiculous almost, don't we?
It was an amazing performance, absolutely amazing performance. And, you know, we all know what pressure he was under. And as Chris Meek fans, I think we've talked about it before, we all sort of live stage by stage with his rallies. It was dominant, wasn't it? It was absolutely dominant. And these were the performances we hoped we'd see from Chris Meek all year. Obviously, he talked about a roller coaster. We don't need to go through the ups and downs of the year, but it just shows what inner strength he does have because, you know, all right, he knew the car would be good on the tarmac as long as he could be competitive on the gravel. But still, the inner confidence to drive with that speed when he had the lead he had and, you know, and be, like I said, just be confident in making the car do what he wanted to do without mistakes was brilliant. And that's exactly what we want to see from Chris Meek, and it couldn't have been better timed all round. I mean, he needed that for his confidence, he needed it for his career. I'm sure Yves Matton breathed a sigh of relief as well. I mean, obviously Linda Jackson, senior management from Citroen, was there to see it. So great timing for the team, and let's hope they can build on that and you know, have a sustained challenge next year, because that's what we want to see. We want to see Citroen at the front on every rally, not just this sporadic performance that they seem to have at the minute.
I think so. Before I come to Jack, right, I'm going to put this to you because you've competed a little bit for a number of years. Now, there was quite a lot. There was quite a lot of nice images of Chris there. Obviously, he had his wife and his two children there and things like that. And he seemed very relaxed. He seemed almost out of the bubble of motorsport because his kids were there and he was shown around the car and things like that. Lovely, lovely images. But he seems very, very relaxed. Is there something to be said for that? You know, having people around you like that, does it bring you to a relaxed state of mind almost where you're thinking about something else? Or I don't know. What have you had that when you've been rallying?
I mean, I couldn't ever say I had the pressure on my shoulders that Chris has had this year. But I guess in some ways, you know, he spends most of his time in Andorra now, so it's relatively close for the family. And I guess it maybe took some of the pressure off in that there is more to life than rallying, isn't there? I mean, we all forget that at times, and it's easy to get carried away with these things. But ultimately for him, you know, in 10 years time, and maybe even 5 years time, he'll see a lot more of his family, and rallying will be less important in his life. His family will always be there. So I guess, yeah, having family around, it's a nice distraction and a nice reminder that there is more to world than rallying.
Jack, I guess for you guys as well, it adds the happy family element to all that. Chris being happy is the key to all the success, isn't it?
Possibly, yeah. I suppose. There is always those drivers who get a bit riled up when they're angry and seem to perform better on that side of things. But I think it just depends on the character, doesn't it? What that person favours, and you know, we don't know. I mean, you can assume, judging by the victory, that it didn't affect him in an adverse way. But maybe, you know, there is the possibility that having family there and things can put added pressure on, because, you know, especially with his wife and kids, they've not been to an event for a long time. I think it was, I think he said 7 years. It was the last time he had sort of people who were close to him, that close to him, sort of at an event. So, you know, things like that can affect you adversely. But obviously in this situation, it seems to have worked well for Chris.
Happy days. And again, it was one of those victories, Jack, that, Rye's already said it, and I think we're stating the obvious almost. It was needed, but it wasn't scrappy, was it? It was just that, it was almost like there was Chris, and then there was the rest of the rally going on around him.
It was absolutely effortless. It really was. And you the only way to kind of sum that up is to look at the stage times on the Sunday, which is usually when the leader of the rally, who's got a bit of a gap, sort of trails back a little bit and sometimes saves their tires at the power stage, or in general just throttles back to save that lead and to not do anything stupid. And Chris was still setting fastest times all day on Sunday. The only stage he didn't actually top was the power stage. So that tells me that Chris's pace was completely effortless on the Sunday, because there's no way he would have gone out on that Sunday morning after the year he's had and the problems that he's had, saying, I'm going to try and set fastest time on every single stage this morning to try and prove a point. I'm sure the target would have been on Sunday morning to go out there and hold that lead, maintain it for as long as possible, and just bring it home after the few months he's had. So I don't know about you two, but for me, the setting all those fastest times on that Sunday just shows how sort of comfortable Chris was in that car. And sort of how supreme he was.
Absolutely. Right, do we need to rein back our enthusiasm a little bit? Obviously, we've got Wales Rally GB coming up in a little short 2 weeks' time now. God, it's upon us. I can't quite get used to the date change, but very different rally, very different conditions. Obviously, it's not going to be a typical GB in many ways. It's probably not going to be quite as wet, probably quite as cold, but it is Wales, so it could be. Do we have to manage our expectations? And does Chris and does Citroen have to manage their expectations for that now?
Well, Chris has already started doing that, hasn't he? You know, he's already said that, you know, things haven't changed. We don't know the exact details, but obviously the car seems to work when the grip level's good. But maybe they struggle, certainly on the rougher stages. We've seen the damper problems they've had, but they seem to have got to the bottom of that. We know they changed the damper supplier, so maybe that issue's sorted, but still it doesn't necessarily seem to work in lower grip conditions. And also the other big difference with Rally GB is that everybody wants to run at the front, because it does cut up, it polishes when it's wet. So the best thing we could hope for, I think, for Chris Meek is a dry Rally GB. I mean, obviously that's pretty rare. That doesn't happen very often. But if we could see a warmer than usual Rally GB, a dry Rally GB where it was actually beneficial to run a little bit further back on the road, then I think he could be competitive. But I think if it's wet and muddy like we normally see, then we can't expect to see him put in a dominant performance like he did at the weekend.
I can't wait. Genuinely can't wait. And I think now is a good time, Jack, to have the debrief on really what happened to Hyundai. I think it's obvious what happened. Obviously, they all took the same cut, it felt like. But great hope going in. Obviously, Andreas coming into the team, you know, bolster the squad, get a, you know, to try and really take the fight to M Sport on the last three rounds. And backfired isn't the expression, is it? But it really didn't go according to plan.
It was a capitulation, wasn't it? It really was. Yeah. Sort of.
That's what like I was looking for, Jack Benyon. I knew you'd find the right word.
There we go. Well, you know, I think first to point out, I think Mikkelsen's performance has been a little bit lost in the results sheets. You know, obviously he's disappeared from those results sheets because he hit that same rock as Sordo. But him to be leading overnight after the gravel stages in his first event in the Hyundai is pretty special. We saw him have that quick run in the Hyundai a few months ago, didn't we, before he moved to Citroën, and then we've seen him have a couple of events in the Citroën, but we've not seen any extensive sort of driving in this Hyundai. He's picked up very quickly and to be leading on the gravel stages I thought was very impressive from him. Yeah, Sordo looked like a challenger throughout, didn't he? There wasn't any sort of, from memory, there wasn't any sort of flashes of pace where I thought, he's going to run away with the rally. But he was there or thereabouts on all of the, you know, the gravel stages, which is where you would expect Danny to maybe lose a bit of time. And then when we got to the asphalt, he was right there or thereabouts. So Andreas, I expected to drop away on the tarmac. I think everyone did. You know, he's not got the experience of the car on the tarmac, and the car had been understeering. So to be learning in a car that's maybe a little bit unpredictable, you know, that you'd expect a lot of him. But Sordo seemed to hit the sweet spot fairly quickly on the asphalt, and he looked like a real challenger. So, yeah, as you mentioned, they both hit the same rock. It was pulled out. It differs between driver to driver what they actually hit. Some say a post, some say a rock. So not entirely sure what it was. But we know Ojt Tanak hit the same thing and didn't break anything. So there's been some talk maybe that the Hyundai suspension is a little bit weaker. We've seen it with the R5 car, haven't we? I've seen it very hands-on in the British Rally Championship with Tom Cave. He's had two problems with suspensions in two different events. So I think Hyundai do need to look at what they're doing, and we've got a story in MN that you know, Michelle Nandon's going to be taking a look at that over the rest of the year, ready for next year. But yeah, we don't know how hard Tanak hit those rocks and how hard Sordo and Mikkelsen hit them, so it's difficult to sort of establish whether that was the, you know, whether it was the Hyundai's fault or the driver's fault really. But yeah, and then Thierry's event, sorry, I'm going into a bit of a monologue now, and I've been speaking for a while.
Go, it's all good.
Thierry Neuville had a really strange Saturday where hydraulic problems. He shut the car down in a road section, couldn't get the car restarted again, and then in a rush to get to the next stage, crashed on the road section, which really didn't help him. He was 3 minutes late to the stage, so had a 30-second penalty, and that was him pretty much out of the fight for victory. And then the next day he retired after hitting a rock, a different one, admittedly, to his teammates. But yeah, his challenge is over now, and I think although he's mathematically in with a chance of the title, I think everyone can accept that it's going to take a lot of issues for Sébastien Ogier for him not to take the title now. And yeah, absolutely disastrous event. A, for Thierry's Drivers' Championship hopes, but B, for Hyundai's Manufacturer Championship hopes, because I think M Sport only needs to score 4 points on GB now to seal the Manufacturer's Championship. And when we look at things, I think maybe the Manufacturer's Championship doesn't always get looked at with the same sort of attention as the Drivers' Championship does. But this year, those manufacturers we've got the new rule cycle, and we've got more attention on the WRC than we've had for a long time. And I think those manufacturers are really after that championship this year. They really want to be able to say they were the ones that won the first, you know, of the 2017 rule cycle and have that sort of badge of honour. So I think Hyundai, they'll be hurt a little bit by what's happened on this event for sure. And I think M Sport, it's going to be a bit of a fairy tale if they can wrap it up on GB, isn't it?
Absolutely. Before we go to M Sport, I just want to come back to Hyundai with Ryan, and also specifically to Thierry Neuville. Do you feel from a driver's point of view, he seemed tense at most stage ends, but he had quite a lot going on. Do you think this is a classic example of inexperience in the championship, maybe starting to feel the pressure?
Well, it said before the rally that he was going to take risks, hadn't he? It seemed a little bit of an odd comment, because obviously he'd been pushing for rally wins all season. So to actually comment before the rally, oh, I'm really going to push hard and take chances. Well, if that's what he went out to do, he did that, and it didn't work very well, did it? Yeah, I suppose in some ways you could be right. You know, at the end of the day, Ogier's been there and done it, and this is what he's very good at. He's very good at, as we've seen all year, grinding results out, and ultimately if you get a strong result on every rally, then you'll be there for the championship at the end. And And yeah, Neville's definitely made it easy for him over the last couple of rallies. There is a weakness there with the Hyundai, clearly. I mean, I think we saw a similar failure with Neville in Germany as well, when he hit the edge of the road and you know, and broke the suspension there. We saw three similar failures in Spain. So they do clearly have an issue there, which is unfortunate for them. But yeah, Neville just seems to be on the back foot. I mean, you know, whatever happened on the road section, I saw somewhere that he said he'd gone off warm in his tyres, which actually it's not the first time I've seen that. I've seen people do that. You know, for anybody who's listening, what's all that about? I mean, there is some serious tyre warming goes on before the stage starts. A lot of weaving about on the road, which the police frown upon in various countries if they see you doing it. But it's not the first time that I've seen somebody go off the road doing that. But I don't know if he was just literally going too fast or if he was warming his tyres. But either way, he had a disastrous weekend, and his world championship hopes are going to...
I think we've lost you there, Ryan Champion. Oh, you're back again.
Still here.
I thought... Yeah, sorry, I thought I'd lost you for a second there. It's okay, it's all good, it's all good. But yeah, just going back to obviously Hyundai and everything, it's a bizarre situation now, isn't it, Jack? That it is effectively, as you say, it's all but got the bow on it for M Sport.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I know I always do this, and it's I promise it's not because I'm a massive Sebastian Ogier fan, but this is another perfect cross section of why Sebastian Ogier is the best driver in the championship, because he had exactly the same problems as Thierry Neuville starting this event and going into the event. Although Ogier was magnificent on the gravel, I thought, given that he was sweeping the road. When we got to the asphalt stages, both he and Neuville were both struggling with the setup of their cars. Neuville had a lot of understeer, as the other Hyundai drivers did. But fast forward to the end of the event, and Sebastian Ogier finished second. And that's because he didn't take any stupid risks. He accepted that he wasn't the fastest driver out there any one time. In fact, he even admitted it at the stage end, "I'm too slow." He actually said that, and he acknowledged that. But he says he's too slow, and he's finished second at the end of the event. Now, if that doesn't tell you why Sebastian Ogier wins championships, I don't know what does. And I know we always come back to it, but he's always going to be in battles with drivers like Thierry Neuville. And until drivers like Thierry Neuville learn the Sebastian Ogier way of winning a championship, they're not going to win the championship. They're definitely not going to beat him. Even if you played him at his own game, I don't think you'd be able to beat Sebastian Ogier. But they need to get on his page, because what he is doing is maximising the amount of points he gets on each event. And we've seen Neuville crash again, and we've seen Sebastian Ogier finish second. So for me, that's a perfect reason why Ogier is such a multiple champion. But yeah, as you said, going back to M Sport, they only need 4 points from GB on their home event, which is going to be, you know, really big. You know, Malcolm's made a big investment in getting Sebastian Ogier there this year, hasn't he? And there was a big debate about where Ogier was going to go. It was a big coup for M Sport to get him. And if they want to attract someone like Ford back, which they're obviously trying to do, then sort of winning the Constructors' Championship on their home event is going to cause a lot of good publicity, and that's always good when you're trying to attract a manufacturer back.
Absolutely. Before we move away from this, Jack, I wanted to mention this almost separately, but you've led me kind of into it a little bit. There's meant to be some announcements this week, and by the time this podcast has dropped, they may have dropped the announcements. I really don't know. There's been lots of people alluding to press releases that are about to come out and things like that. I'll be honest with you, I genuinely don't care about saying that this driver's going to go there or this driver's going to go there. It's nice to talk about it, but I don't particularly feel the need that I need to tell you who it is. But while we're talking about this, is that the one thing I have heard, Jack, is that Tanak is pretty much nailed on going to Toyota. God, there's a rumour that going to Toyota. It does feel a little bit like transfer deadline day here in terms of football, where somebody spotted somebody near an airport or something like that. It's kind of got spatterings of that. You know, somebody's seen Tanak and a Toyota Prius leaving the airport, that type of thing. But Tanak has been supposedly that he could be going to Toyota. If that's the case, does that free up some budget? And I've heard that Timo Sunnerin could be replacing him at M Sport. Could that be budget that could go towards retaining Ogier, or is it just a given now if M Sport stay as they are, it's going to be a completely different driver lineup next season?
Well, I can't comment on Tanak. I don't know any more about that than what you've said there. And David Evans certainly hasn't written anything about it in MN this week. So I'll leave that one to come out whenever it comes out, if it is true. If it's not, then you, there you go. I think the nailed-on sort of replacement for him, if he did go, would be Elvin Evans for sure in an M Sport back car. And there has been a lot of talk about Timo Sunen and what he'll do. I heard the rumour that he's probably going to do about 6 events next year, maybe some in an R5, some in a WRC car. But again, that's rumour. I don't know anything more than that, but there is a bit in MN this week that David Evans has written that says that Sebastian Ogier is now favourite to re-sign for M Sport or to retire. So given that, he's gone into a bit more detail talking about the French media have reported that Citroën won't have the budget to bring Ogier back to France, and he's also said that although Hyundai have talked about this huge 10 million bid or eight, I think it was £8.9 million, wasn't it? 10 million euros. Although that's been talked about, there's not been any sort of formal offer yet, according to him. So from what I've read from David, it sounds like Ogier's favourite to return to M Sport. And what that means for Tanak, I'm not entirely sure. I mean, Malcolm will be desperate to keep Tanak and Ogier together for next year, I would have thought, because looking at this year's championship, you know, they're the two drivers you want in that are going to be available in your squad, aren't they? You know, they've done a fantastic job and they're about to deliver M Sport the Constructors' Championship if everything stays the same. So it's I'm sure Malcolm will be trying hard to keep both of them. There's been a lot of talk about trying to keep Ogier, but I think he'll be wanting to keep Tanak just as much, or if, you know, looking at the future as well, Tanak's a bit younger and he'll be someone they want to keep and someone they've developed and put a lot of time into.
This is Absolute Rally, Case Notes Rally Magazine, Britain and Ireland's only dedicated rally publication. Rally news, interviews, features and reports from Clubman rallies to the WRC. Available from all good news agents or subscribe at rallymag.com. Pace Notes Rally Magazine, your number one monthly rally read. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Right, Oit has really kind of stepped it up. We've spoke about Oit before, haven't we? You know, he's been around M Sport for many years. He's been in and out of favour and everything else. But now, again, he's a driver that looks like he belongs. He's very comfortable. He's very confident. And, you know, he was still talking about fighting for this title even before Spain.
Yeah, he's, like you said, he's been around WRC a long time. He's been around M Sport for a long time, but he really has stepped on this year, and he now does look like he could win the World Championship. He has the speed on both tarmac and gravel. He's very cool. He's good under pressure. You know, he wasn't comfortable at times with the car at the weekend, which is unusual for him because he has generally made the car work very well all year. And what he has done is put Ogier under pressure this year. You know, there's been several rallies where Tanak's been faster than Ogier. So he's done a brilliant job. I mean, like you, I've heard all the same rumours about him going to Toyota. And in some ways, that would be a shame because now he has, I don't want to say come of age, but now he's matured into this competitive driver for the full season. It would be a shame if M Sport lost him at this stage in his career. But, you know, certainly going to be a merry-go-round. And one thing I just wanted to add on the Thierry Neuville thing when you lost me a minute ago was Neuville's lost this championship. Thierry Neuville had the speed to win the World Rally Championship this year, and he's just not put that title charge together. And, you know, if we see Tanak going well next year, if we see the Toyota improving with Latvala, with Meek, you know, Neuville might have just lost his chance to win the World Championship. He really needs to look at what he does for next year because he had the speed to win it this year.
Couldn't agree more. Boys, before we move on, Jack, I wanted to ask you about what's going on with JWRC for next year. Your man, I think, won JWRC this year. Your man who you tipped, I think he's won every round of it, hasn't he?
Yeah, Neil Solans.
Yeah, so I think he's now, I think it works out, he's won every available drive. That was the prize, in the R5. Now, there's been a bit of a reconfiguration of the championship. They've dropped it from 6 events to 5 events. Is it fair to say that the uptake this year has kind of dropped off a little bit? Are they trying to entice people back in, do you think?
I don't know if the uptake's fallen. I'm not sure about that. I don't want to sound sort of unfair about this, but for me, I don't think the standard's been quite there this year. And I think that's been proven by the fact that Neil's won pretty much every event. You know, I think the quality of the drivers in the championship has not been as good as in previous years, personally. And, you know, feel free to tweet in and talk about that. And, you know, if you've been watching the JWRC this year closely, then do sort of put me right on that if you think I'm wrong. But, you know, last year we had the prizes being split between some really good young drivers, didn't they? You know, we had Ocean Price and John Armstrong from the UK as well. So, I think the standard's not quite been there, and I think they're trying to entice back some of the young guys who may be splitting their plans. Some people who've stayed at national level, some people who've gone to Europe, and some people who've just saved their money and, you know, saving to go straight into an R5 or not to bother the JWRC. So,
well, that's where I was going to go, and I was going to ask Ryan about this. Right, if you were a young man at the moment, because you're not, but if you was and you had an amount of money and you still had that aspiration and everything else, would you look at more of a limited R5 program, you know, a couple of events in an R5 car, or maybe three or four events in your national championships in an R5, maybe even five if you could squeeze it, or would you go and do JWRC?
Knowing what I do now, I'd be realistic and keep the money. Unless there's a whole lot more to follow it. It's probably pointless exercise. But... I think what we're seeing with the Drive DMAT Trophy and now the JWRC, I mean, it has worked very well in helping drivers progress through the ranks. You know, there is at least now stepping stones within the WRC. You know, and I think that's the good thing that's come from it. Like you said, though, you want strength in depth. You want to be beating a good field. The problem is if you do a selected program in an R5 car, I mean, having said that, we've seen Huttonen do, you know, rallies in an R5 car and go well straight away. But what I was going to say was we've got a lot of good drivers around in R5 cars at the minute, work-supported R5 cars out there as well. So you'd have to be careful that you didn't get lost in it, because you could soon spend a lot of money doing, you know, half a dozen rallies in an R5 car, and unless you had the time and the budget to keep at it, you could spend that money and not really get anywhere. So, you know, I think I still would try and go the junior route and work my way up.
Here's a question for the pair here. Ryan's got experience of this, and Jack will have an opinion, so this is quite good. The JWRC has been, well, rather the DMAC Drive Trophy over the last few years has possibly outshone JWRC, which is how in some ways it's been migrated into one thing now. But the heyday of JWRC for me was when we had different manufacturers and different, you know, Super 1600s, and that's where I kind of remember, you know, drivers coming through from, obviously the likes of Guy Wilkes with the Suzuki, and obviously Chris with the Citroen, obviously, you know, Sebastian Ogier, Sebastian Loeb with Citroen, and you know, everything else. Now, am I off on this, Jack? Are we getting fewer now, or is it, would it be better to go back to those days? Would it be good to have almost manufacturer battles again at that level?
I don't know if you would get manufacturers spilling down to that level anymore. It's a difficult one, isn't it? You've got a perfect sort of comparison, really, in the junior ERC, haven't you? That, you know, Chris Ingram's going to talk about him later on, that he's just won. But obviously the difference being there that's ERC events and not WRC events. So if you want to get a set of pace notes for the WRC, then the JWRC is the place to go. I think for me, all boils down to budget. If you're, you know, if you know that you're going to have enough money to get into an R5 car and then compete at the front, let's take Gus Greensmith, friend of the show, for example. Perfect example. Did the JWRC, knew that he was going to have enough money to be able to compete in an R5 car when the time came. Went and did all the Drive DMAT Trophy events, got good pace notes for those events, and then moved up to the R5. And now he's doing a bit of learning in the championship this year. And you know, I think it's fair to say Gus has shown a good turn of speed this year. If you're a driver who doesn't have the budget and is struggling, then the ERC Junior Championship is the best place for you to go, because you've got if you can win, like Chris has done, you've got the chance to win some money towards the events in the ERC. So I don't know. I suppose you could also argue with the JWRC, you've got that prize structure where it's split up, so you've got two different events. But I think when I was, the reason why I didn't mention that earlier was because the prize structure for next year has not actually been decided, and that's to come in a month. So I think to talk about next year's prize would be too quick in terms of the JWRC. But it's difficult, isn't it? I think if you want to go and do these WRC events where your expenses are going to be high, I think for me, you've got to know that you're going to have the money to get to the next level and then to the next level. Otherwise, I don't really see the point in doing it.
Do you think we are missing something? Because you, of course, was part of that Super 1600 kind of picture to some degree. But, you know, do we miss something having, you know, other manufacturers? You know, we could have a Peugeot 208 R2. We could have an Opel Adam R2. We could have a Fiesta R2. Are we missing something there? Or is it good that we are on all the level playing field?
I think ultimately it is good that there's a level playing field in the JWRC. I mean, back in the days of Super 1600, obviously it was very expensive at the time. You had cars varying wildly. I mean, I think the R2 cars are probably more on a level playing field than the Super 1600 cars were back in the day. But I think ultimately at that level, you're wanting to see the best driver rather than the best car. So, you know, obviously if everybody's in the same car, then hopefully the best driver shines, and then you're not having to try and find the best equipment first and then, you know, the best driver second. So, I mean, obviously having been through various one-make routes, then I'd be an advocate of that. But I think at a junior world level and a world championship works
there
quite
you go.
Well.
Boys, we're going to go from the sublime, as far as I'm concerned, of an amazing, as I say, weekend of Great Britain and at its best in rallying with regards to Moongate. And Moongate is made the motorsport press all over the world now. And Jack Benyon, I'm going to come to you first on Moongate.
I was hoping you weren't going to ask me about this.
What's your take on? Maybe I should explain. Okay, folks, if you're not aware of this, there has been a competitor here in the UK who competes in the Scottish Championship, used to do British Championship many, many years ago, a guy called Jack Armstrong, who was photographed mooning while marshalling on an event, albeit on a non-competitive section, or there was a non-competitive section going on, and the photograph went viral on social media. Somebody's seen it. He's now been suspended and fined £1,000. Is that about right, Jack?
You just broke up a little bit. His license has been suspended for 6 months. Yeah,
and £1,000 fine.
This is
a competitor that obviously supports the championship, sponsors one of the events as well in the Scottish Championship, or has done in the past, and is made a little bit of a faux pas, but, you know, it's the jock's a bit of a character, I think it's fair to say. What's your take on it, Jack?
I think Jock has done something wrong, and he's readily admitted that. If you read MN today, he's admitted he's done something wrong. And I think it's important to consider, you know, a few bits of context when you were talking about this. A, Jock was marshalling, which is great. You know, he's a double Scottish Rally Champion, giving something back to the sport. But also, he had an MSA Marshall tabard on, and pulling a Mooney at a car that's coming, whether it's at competition speed or not, is not what you want to be caught doing in a picture. And, you know, I think Jock acknowledges that and realizes he's done something wrong. One thing I did want to point out, because I knew you were going to ask me about this, even though I was hoping you wouldn't. I've seen a lot of comments on Facebook and things like this saying, you know, the MSA are out of order, giving him this ban, and the MSA, you know, the MSA this and the MSA that. I think it's worth pointing out that the court's independent. So although the MSA have referred this incident to the national court in the UK, it's a national court that's taken Scott's license away. And Jock's, I keep calling him Scott. I don't know why it keeps coming out of my mouth.
Because he's from Scotland.
I don't know why I keep doing that.
Yeah.
It must be that. So yeah, so they're the ones who've suspended Jock's license. I don't mind the fine because I think Jock's done something wrong, and, you know, £1,000 is a lot of money. I don't know if I would have, you know, if I was one of the judges, I don't know if I'd have given him £1,000 fine, but I would have given him a fine. What I'm not sure about, and I'm not saying that this is wrong or right, I'm just not sure about it, is the fact that they've suspended his competition license for something he was doing while he was marshalling. And that sets a bit of a worrying precedent for me, because, yes, Jock is a Scottish rally personality. And he is a champion who maybe should be acting with a little bit more decorum than to be caught mooning at a car and having a picture taken of it. But at the same time, that's ruined his championship for next year in the Scottish Rally Championship as a competitor for something he was doing while he was marshalling. So for me, I'll be honest, I really can't decide whether I think that ban is right or wrong. What I do think is silly is that all of this could have been swept away quietly. But the wider media has got hold of this now, and the problem with that is we've got a fatal accident inquiry going on into rallying in the UK for deaths that happened on the 2013 Snowman Rally and 2014 Jim Clark Rally. And while rallying is in the spotlight for safety like that and people actually dying, to have headlines like I'm not going to repeat any of the headlines, but to have some tabloid type headlines about this is not what rallying needs right now. So I think the court has taken into account the fact that Jock is a champion of in Scotland and is a well-known personality, and also they've taken into context the wider situation of the sport at the minute, the discipline, and I think that's why they've decided to ban him, and I think that's why it's happened. Whether that ban is right or not, I'm not entirely sure, because it does ruin his championship for next year, although he's done something stupid, and I'm not sure if that's too harsh a punishment or not.
Ryan Champion.
Could talk on yes, okay, Jock did something wrong. Jock's been a character of our sport for a guy. I met Jock on the Galloway Hills Rally in 1992, I think. He was seeded car behind me. And Jock's never been any different, and Jock is a character. And ultimately, he was marshalling out of the good of his heart. Yes, he did something wrong, but he was a volunteer marshal. So he volunteered to marshal, and he gets his competition license taken off him. I just think it's completely wrong. If you want to set out a precedent, give him a reprimand, threaten to take his license off him, give him a suspended ban. But I think he was a marshal, and you find effectively a marshal £1,000 and taking their competition license off them. Yeah, he could go marshalling again next weekend. I'm sure he won't.
That's the amazing quote that he gave me in the story. That's the one of the last quotes in the piece, is that he could go marshalling tomorrow, which is I have to agree with you there, right? I think that's that's really poignant, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is, and I don't disagree. He did something wrong, and fine, if you want to set a precedent, make a point over it. But I think to take his competition license off him is completely wrong in the first instance. And like I said, secondly, you're going to fine a volunteer marshal £1,000 for, first infringement, as it were. I just think it does set a precedent, and ultimately there's probably more pressing things for our sport to worry about.
I agree with both of what you've said. The big thing that I think a couple of people have already pointed this out, how it got to this point, I think is ridiculous. That's the biggest ridiculousness to me, is the fact that it got to this point, and it got to a situation where it was in an independent court, which Jackie just made reference to. The fact that it was there, I still can't quite get my head around how it got that far. And that's what I find really, really disappointing with all that's going on at the moment. The fact that this thing is being allowed to run. I think it could have been handled so much better. It's been an absolute PR disaster, and just when they didn't probably need a PR disaster, because as you made reference to, Jack, we have had tabloid headlines about this, and that's exactly what we don't need, and that's exactly what's being generated. So that's my take on it anyway. Although I did do some tongue-in-cheek things last week, if you pardon the obvious pun on this particular story. Boys, want to get to, we're going to be talking to Chris Ingram a little bit later on, but ERC, Jack Bengen, we're now in the realms of, obviously, we've just had the final round of ERC. And it's what I found a shame was the fact that, and again, we have this quite a lot all over the world, but it was on the same weekend as Spain. And I do feel like something was lost from the event because it was on the same weekend as Spain. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I did feel something was lost. Do you want me to talk about the event now?
Please do.
Should we go into it? I think that was a lot of it. And I think a lot, for me, a lot of the what was lost about the event was because of Kaito, because he won the championship over the weekend. And that was very quickly kind of quietened off by the fact that one of his friends died in the helicopter crash that happened during the event. So there was no celebration really for Kaito. There was no social media from him or any sort of acknowledgement that he'd won a championship, because he was so, you know, he withdrew from the event actually after stage 11 with, I think he was on the podium with two stages to go and actually withdrew from the event because he got the phone call to say that, you know, two of his friends had been in this helicopter crash and one of them had died and one of them was seriously injured. So the emotion that he must have been going through on the event is just incredible. I mean, you know, he was on the podium and ready to win his third ERC championship in a row, which is a record. No one's done three in a row before. We've had three-time winners like Luca Rossetti, I think, was a three-time winner. But Kaito's the first person to do it three times in a row anyway. And just that spell of emotion where he's gone from waiting for that to happen to what had happened over the event. So that was really sad. And I think that took a lot away from the actual post-event hype as well. And I think you would have heard a lot more about the event if that hadn't have taken place. So that was really sad. But what we can take from it is, you know, Britain's got another ERC champion in Chris Ingram. We won the under-27 junior championship and the ERC 3 championship, which is just for front-wheel drive cars, for the second year in a row he won that one. So, yeah, brilliant story for him. And I'm sure we'll hear more about his views later, but a great opportunity for his career now for someone who doesn't have the funding to really go and do a proper R5 program. This is really going to help him out.
This is the Absolute Rally Podcast. Click motorsportauctions.com. Now, one of the world's leading motorsport online classified adverts and auction sites. It's easy to use, providing listing platforms that enable you to sell race and rally cars, surplus parts, transporters, clothing, workshop, and pit equipment. We specialize in cataloguing, listing, and selling large quantities of motorsport-related surplus and obsolete stock. Click motorsportauctions.com. This is Absolute Rally.
Boys, we're getting very quickly towards that time, believe it or not, of any other business. Now, we've had 2 weeks off, and I'm hoping, Jack Benyon, you've got an absolute scorcher, and I hope you have as well, Ryan Champion. Have you?
I wouldn't have said just sculpture. I haven't been desperate to get off my desk for 2 weeks.
Oh, come on, right? You know, I'll be honest with you, right? I was kind of looking forward to this. Thought the boys have had 2 weeks. You know, I'll be honest with you. I've been in complete nutter gaga land, thinking any moment now our child's going to arrive and rallying will go out the window. So I've kind of been in preparation for all this. I was thinking Jack and Ryan won't let me down. I'll tell you one thing we have got to do, boys, before we go to any other business as well. We've got a little bit of prize draw to win a subscription to Pace Notes. So I'm gonna draw that. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, so there's no conflict of interest, Jack Benyon, I want to ask you to be part of this draw.
Well, am I in the draw, and B, I still haven't got my copy of Pace Notes that I was promised.
Okay, I'll sort that out for you. I'm sorry. I'll sort Thank that. You. Right. Well, Thank as you. You spoke up, you're going to tell me when to stop, because I've got some names in the hat.
Okay.
And you're going to tell me when to stop. And we've
started.
Right. Tell me when to stop, Jack Benyon, because I'm now drawing. This is not great podcasting stuff. I'm the first to admit. But the sooner Jack Benyon says stop.
Go.
Thank you very much. Thank you for screaming that. Phil Kellum. Congratulations. Thank you for emailing in. You have won a year subscription to Pace Notes. We've got your email details. We'll get those sorted out for you along with
10 quid in the post, please. Phil, my address is in the back of MN.
We'll get yours sorted for you, Jack Benyon. Jesus, isn't it? I didn't realise how precious you were. As you've been quite vocal through this point, I reckon you've probably said more than me and Ryan put together. So for that purpose, and for that purpose only, I'm actually going to allow you to do your any other business now. Yes.
Is that right? I had a few, but because you've criticised
me
for talking so much,
I'll do it. I'm just conscious because you're a man in demand and we've got another 5 minutes with you.
I'm never in demand. I wish I was. Three very quick things then. Cameron Davis drove the electric rally car that I spoke about on the podcast a few weeks ago. It's a Renault Zoe electric car built to junior Formula 1000 sort of technical regulations that we have over here in the UK. Did a pretty good job. I think they missed the split, but apart from that, I think they were running 32nd out of 45 cars. Were you at that then, Tony?
I was.
So you will have seen this happen in the flesh.
Yeah, I'm probably not going to do your any other business any favours, to be fair.
Was it unappealing to watch because
incredibly.
It was silent?
Oh,
that's a shame. Was there no tyre squealing going on or anything like that?
Oh, no, it was a bit shame. Like a big Tamiya remote control car.
The one thing I was found very interesting was it's got an automatic brake, yeah. So when you let off the throttle, it brakes, which is outrageous.
Yeah, quite a lot going on, to be fair. I had a chat with Cameron, to be fair. And, obviously he was there to do a job and everything else. But personally, I watched it and I thought, if this is the future, we're screwed.
Yeah, I don't think... Let's just get one thing straight. Electric rallying is not the future. There's no way we'll ever get electric rally cars going into the woods, I don't think, unless there's some sort of hilarious horn system that alerts you to when the car...
Well, it would make a mockery of the seeding, but...
Maybe to bring F1 into it, we need one of those trumpet things they were going to put on the back of the cars a couple of years ago to make them louder.
I can definitely see electric and wheel rallycross.
Yeah, definitely. That's the place for it, I think. That's the perfect place for it.
Go on, your next one.
Just the other couple of small things. Nicky Grist did the Thousand Lanes Road Rally on the weekend, which I thought was brilliant. He went back to the start of his career. Nicky, someone we all know very well, and he hadn't done a road rally for a very long time. Actually sat in with the driver. He made his MN Road Rally Championship debut with his co-driver, the first time he'd been a proper co-driver with Steve Davis in a Ford Escort Mark II. So he had a really good run around the roads around his house, and he didn't realise how many good roads he had around Abergavenny, which is near where he lives. So that was really cool. And there's a good picture in MN of him with his glasses holding the paper a very, very long way away as though his eyesight is waning a little bit. I'm sure that's not the case. And then the third one is what I think is the quite exciting one. I don't know if we've done this on Absolute Rally before. Apologies if you have, but I need the listeners to get involved with this one, and you two can get involved with this one as well. So over the weekend, there was an event in Ireland called the Donegal Harvest Rally, and I'm not even going to talk about any of the competitors because it was the Zero car I was interested in. Did you see this, Rye?
I didn't, no.
Donna Kelly has got I call it new. It's a historic spec Opel Ascona. And it's a perfect replica of the car that James Cullen drove in one of the 1980 editions of the Donegal International Rally. It's a pretty cool livery. I'll let you go and dig some pictures out. There's loads on Facebook and various other places, and we'll tweet a couple this week as well. But the reason for asking about this was because it sounded absolutely incredible. And the Ascona is I don't know if it's well known for being a good sounding rally car, but for me it's such a brilliant noise, and it's a real screamer of a car, and there's lots of videos of it coming in, sort of not being in sight, but sort of popping out of square corners and stuff on videos, but you've already heard it coming for 5 minutes before it actually comes into sight because it's so loud. So I want to ask you two and the Absolute Rally listeners, what is the best sounding rally car ever? And I'm going to stipulate that they have to be either homologated or have competed at the front of the WRC or in WRC before homologation existed. So I don't want like Alex Kelsey's home-built car or anything like that. We want proper WRC competing cars or ERC competing cars.
I'll come back to you next week on that one. Yeah. Ryan Champion, you're any of the business?
So are we coming back to that next week? We're coming back. Okay, I could answer that one, but I'll come back to it next week. A couple of things from my any other business. Jack and I have both been involved in raising awareness for the Down Syndrome Association through rallying with Down Syndrome, and congratulations to Alex Stone, who won the rally at Three Sisters that you were talking about at the weekend. So Alex and his dad John won in their Fiesta. So Alex has now won four rallies, I think, showing that Down syndrome doesn't stop you going rallying. So congratulations to him on that. And my other any other business really sort of it was another historic look. So a little bit of a look back at firstly the history of Rally Catalunya or Rally Spain, whichever way you look at it. It's been in the WRC now for 26 years, since 1991. Can you remember, Jack Brennan, who won the first Rally Catalunya? First WRC Rally Catalunya.
Am I allowed to ask what year was the first?
It was 1991, which might help you.
Oh.
And I'll give you another clue if you're struggling.
Go on.
All right then, go on. I'll have another clue.
I'm fairly sure I need to 100% check this, but I'm fairly sure it was his only ever WRC win.
Was he German?
He was indeed.
Is it Armin Schwanz?
It was Armin Schwanz in a Celica. Yeah, well done.
There you go.
And he did win the RAC rally, but it was obviously when it was... Exactly. It was under rotation. When it snowed, the last snowy year. So, obviously, been part of the World Championship since then. It was originally a mixed surface rally when it was introduced back then in 1991. And then from then on, it was a tarmac rally. But funnily enough, that sort of led me on to looking at the other rallies that were held on this weekend. Traditionally, this was the time of the year when the San Remo rally was held, which was also known for being mixed surface in WRC. Obviously, a lot of classic memories in the WRC of the San Remo rally, still held now as an Italian championship rally. And it was actually 36 years ago today that San Remo rally saw the first ever win by a female competitor when Michelle Mouton won San Remo in a rally.
And that's what you call a classic, Ryan, champion, any other business. My quick ones, by the way, before we run out of time, any other business, Juha Hänninen, fantastic performance on Spain, and I will be very, very interested to see where he ends up next season, if at all not with Toyota. That's all I'm saying. I think I could see still with a part program there, but anyway, Peugeot staying in World Rallycross, made reference to it before with Electric. Sebastian Loeb staying with that program, which makes me think that perhaps he won't be doing as much WRC as perhaps certain people wanted him to. And the last piece was, yes, I was at the Three Sisters over the weekend, which is a little go-kart track single venue, which we've just been talking about. I managed to sit in with a very, very talented young man called Ryan Burns in a Corsa 1600, which his dad built a few years ago. And it was a pleasure to sit alongside, and he didn't scare me at all, but he was very quick.
Were you
I didn't co-drive. I went and did a test with him on the Saturday. Yeah, no, I wasn't right. Co-driving. Okay. Jesus, no. Heather wouldn't allow me to do that at the moment. We're on standby.
It was mentioned in the report, and I didn't see your name, so I was just wondering I'm sure our brilliant Phil James would have got that wrong.
Phil would have emailed me and everything, though, Phil, but there you go. Boys, we've got to the end of our first episode back with 30 seconds to spare before Jack Bengen has to depart. So there you go. So it's good to be back, isn't it? I think so.
It is. Don't make me feel bad that I'm the one who's going.
It's all right.
You know how precious I am. I don't like to feel bad.
Still getting to the point where we've got to, next week we've got to ask your people to see whether we can get you on again.
You keep making this joke, and it's just never going to happen. I do want it to happen.
You're right. Folks, we will be back, obviously, with these two next week. We're going to go to a little break, and then we're going to come back with the man we've just been talking about, who's just won this €100,000 prize in ERC for winning the Under-27 Junior Championship, Chris Ingram.
This is Absolute Rally, Case Notes Rally Magazine, Britain and Ireland's only dedicated rally publication. Rally news, interviews, features and reports from Clubman Rallies to the WRC. Available from all good news agents or subscribe at rallymag.com. Case Notes Rally Magazine, your number one monthly rally read. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Welcome back to the next section of Absolute Rally, and welcome back to a man we spoke about quite a bit at the beginning of the programme, and kind of all the way through it at different points, but there you go. So we should celebrate success, and we thought we'd get the man on himself. Current ERC3 champion, under-27 champion, and the man who's just picked up a cheque for €100,000. Welcome back to Absolute Rally, Chris Ingram.
Thank you very much. Great to be finally back, having won something decent.
A couple of things before we go any further. How's the hangover?
Not got one.
No?
I just absolutely knackered. Been travelling for the last few days. Only just got home the second.
Fantastic.
But just amazing feeling.
It's, you know, by your own admission, there was a lot said before this rally. You even put out a picture of what happened just before the rally. You kept that one under wraps as well. But
yeah. For
you, this was kind of D-Day, wasn't it? This was the event that effectively was going to define the rest of your career.
Yeah, to be honest, in a brutal way it was, because I felt like I should have won it last year. I was so unlucky. And for that to happen again this year, even though I think I would have deserved to win it, would have been so brutal, and to actually carry on without that support would have been so difficult. So, but thankfully I'm not in that place. I've won it. So
yeah, no, absolutely.
Perfect.
But it's, you know, defining moments, you know, we can all, ironically, in most situations, we tend to be in a where we look back on a defining moment, where you were kind of looking forward at a defining moment where you're going, well, this is it. You know, you were getting up, you know, I seen a couple of things you kind of tweeted and stuff like that, you know. You were going to bed and you were thinking, well, you know, I've got to get up tomorrow morning. This is it. This is kind of, you know, dare I say shit or bust. I can say that because it's my podcast.
Yeah.
It was kind of that shit or bust moment. And then obviously you had the incident where what happened with the little off on shit? Was it a shakedown or was that a test?
That was the test. Yeah. We only did about 20K and then I just put it on its side.
Right.
Off on a muddy corner, which wasn't ideal because we couldn't carry on. So,
yeah. How
had to put that to the back of my head, but at least I found the limit early, whereas a lot of the other guys found the limit on the rally.
Yeah, very true. It's, if you're going to do it, that is the place to do it.
Definitely, yeah.
Obviously, you've had you know, a very successful relationship now with Opel, and obviously you've got stuff going on, of course, with Network Q over here as well. But moving forward now, your career is going to go in a different path. It's going to go towards, I guess, a different manufacturer. Have you started thinking about what's going to happen, where that money's going to go, what you're going to be doing with it?
There's been conversations already, but obviously I'd like to stay with Opel, and I'm still hoping that the R5 happens, maybe if it's not next year, maybe the year after, but I'm still very much going to keep a good relationship with them.
Yeah.
And then potentially maybe just get some R5 experience and see what happens. But some pretty interesting conversations. A lot of people are keen to support me now, so taking the advantage of everyone's advice.
What's the situation with regards to, is there a specific brand you have to go with? You know, do you have to go with Skoda? Do you have to go with Ford or whatever with regards to this price situation?
No, I believe it's completely open, so okay. I need to just keep Eurosport up to date with everything. They've got they have an idea with a Skoda from Motorsport Italia, but it's not like you have to do that, so that's an option.
Okay, but a good team, which has been around a while as well. I just like to say they're a good team, you know, a team I worked with many years ago, and you know, they're a good bunch of people, and yeah, they tend to do things properly. So worst case scenario, it's not actually the end of the world, is it? If that's where you end up, but
definitely, yeah, it'd be car out there probably at the moment.
It probably is. You've tried different R5s. What's happening now? Obviously, we're now in October. We've got Rally GB coming up, which you are entered on. Which car is that you're using on there? Obviously, it'll be a Vauxhall branded car, but where's that car coming from?
That's the factory car that we've just won the championship in. So it's going to be. It's going to be a bit of a celebration, really. We're going to enjoy it. It's probably going to be my last event in an R2 car, so I'm just going to go and have a load of fun. And it's, for me, it's sort of keeping the sponsors happy and giving something back for next year to try and keep everything going. So can't wait for that.
Perfect, perfect. When do you think you will have your plan in place for next season? Because it's weird, isn't it? Because once, I know Rally GB is a little bit early this year, and then we've got Rally Australia. And I always feel rallying is defined by the WRC calendar, funnily enough. But it's very quickly upon us, isn't it? Autosport is on our doorsteps then. And then once Autosport, that's kind of like the line in the sand where everybody feels like everything should be sorted. When do you feel you could think you have a program in place?
Give me a chance, Tony. I've only just got home.
Well, I know, but you've been a busy man. I know you've been a busy man, but, you know, I thought by now you'd have it all sorted.
Hopefully by Christmas, that would be good.
Yeah.
By the end of the year. But you just never know. Like, my Opel deal for this year only came about in, like, February, so.
Okay.
We'll see.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
no
yeah.
idea, to be honest.
I'll see you wandering the floors at Autosport then, no doubt.
Probably.
But we will talk before that anyway. Now, Rally GB obviously is the week after next. What you're going to have a few days off, I guess, and then are we doing a test in Wales, or are we just going to jump straight into the car? What's going to happen?
No test, actually, because Latvia turned out to be extremely muddy and it was actually a really good test itself. So I think we'll be well set for it. I know the stages pretty well. It'll be my first time with Ross doing the rally, so
okay.
We're improving quickly together. It'll be our third rally. Yeah. And just going to really enjoy it, to be honest. I've got so much experience there anyway, so I don't think I necessarily need to work so hard for it as I would for a European Championship event.
Okay. With regards to, it's nice to do your home WRC round. Have we got hopes and aspirations to do further rounds of WRC next year?
I'd love, well, I'm, everything is aiming towards doing Rally GB in an R5 car next year.
Okay.
Okay. That's probably my big ambition, my next big ambition.
Yeah. How do we how do we go about maximising, obviously, the prize and stuff like that? Potentially, I guess that's going to be three, maybe four rounds of ERC. Are you already thinking about how perhaps you can maybe pull that out to a full season, or is that not really an option for you at the moment?
Yeah, definitely. That's what I'm aiming for. This year especially, I've been working really hard with my sponsors. I've been quite successful at it, and they're all really happy with the results. So that's all going very well. Just need to keep pushing that from that angle and try and get as many people on board as possible. So it's going from strength to strength. I've got some great people behind me now, like Robert Reed, who's helping a lot. So I've got good confidence for the future.
Good man, good man. Well, that's good to hear. That's good to hear. Well, listen, sorry to put you under pressure as you've walked back through the door, but we were keen to get you before you fell back to sleep, basically. So, listen, Chris. Listen.
Cheers, Tony.
So we, you know, congratulations. Go and enjoy it, and I can't wait to see what happens next.
Thank you very much.
All right, listen, thanks a lot.
See you in Wales.
You probably will. Folks, we'll be back after this break.
This is the Absolute Rally Podcast. Click motorsportauctions.com. Now, one of the world's leading motorsport online classified advert and auction sites. It's easy to use, providing listing platforms that enable you to sell race and rally cars, surplus parts, transporters, clothing, workshop and pit equipment. We specialise in cataloguing, listing and selling large quantities of motorsport-related surplus and obsolete stock. Click motorsportauctions.com. This is Absolute Rally.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally. Little bit of a confession. At this point, we were going to have Chris Meek, I'll be honest with you. But you may have heard me make reference at the beginning of the programme, the fact that my unborn child is being in Parc Fermé probably 8 or 9 days over. So we're 8 or 9 days overdue. Anyway, long story short, I was scheduled to speak to Chris. It was at that point where it came to light that my child is probably going to be born sometime in the next 12 hours. So I'm now sat in a car park not too far from the hospital finishing this bit. No more smoke and mirrors. As I say, folks, I always try to keep it genuine. So Chris hopefully will be joining us next week. And I can't thank Citroen's PR people enough for being so understanding, because we kind of lined it all up and we've had to change it last minute. But still, there you go. So, it's exciting. Anyway, either way, it's the rally equivalent, I suppose, of going in to do the Turini in the dark with your pace notes in French. And you're not French, obviously. You'll be English or something like that. If you are French, obviously, great for you. But so no lights, no pace notes. And that's how exciting it is. So I know it's going to be great, but still, there you go. So I just thought I'd share a little bit of everyday life, I suppose, at the end of the podcast. So we were going to have both Chris's on that. We've kind of been obviously really, really excited about all the way through the podcast. It was a great weekend for British motorsport in general. But it was great for rallying as well. And it was a great front page by MN and the guys there. But anyway, I better go. It's been great. All being well, we will be back with you next week. We will be back with you next week. And all being well, we will have Chris as well. And we'll do a little bit about Rally GB with Chris as well. But we just wanted to congratulate him. So, Chris, congratulations. Thank you. You were going to give us the time this week. And I blame my unborn child, as yet unnamed, because we don't know what I'm having. So that's how exciting it is. So it could be one or the other. But there you go. Anyway, I'm wittering on now, folks. This is the end of the podcast. We really, really do appreciate the support in the podcast. And congratulations to our winners who won the year's subscription, of course, for Pace Notes. Thank you to Pace Notes for allowing us to come back for another season, because without them, we genuinely wouldn't be here. But yeah, keep downloading the old episodes. You know where to find us now. It's @Absolute_Rally on Twitter, facebook.com/AbsoluteRally. Of course, all the old episodes as well are available on the website, which is absoluterally.co.uk. And folks, keep spreading the love, and thank you all so much for continuing to support the podcast. Back same time, same place, at some point in your little podcast hole next week.